Vasu did not wait.
Quickly, he told Aram. Stuff your table with supplies. Be certain your waste bucket is empty and your water bucket is full. If you need to relieve yourself, do so.
He pointed to the privy door at the far end of the room.
Why the rush? Aram inquired.
A grand combat is about to begin. They must have added it for the prince. Hag cursed them. They could have warned us,
Ramasu said with unusual heat.
Perhaps the prince brought captives he wanted to throw onto the sands. In any case, it's a crowd of fighters divided into two and ordered to fight. Butchery, sheer butchery. Get going.
Later, after things had calmed down, Aram learned that Ramasu was right. Mikram had brought the losers of his last battle home and sent them into the ring against those gladiators who were not used up. Sometimes Aram's nightmares were of this part of the day alone. A never-ending stream of screaming men and women rushed to the tables as quickly as people could be found to carry them. Such pickups were dangerous work, as many who dashed between fighters in the arena discovered. Dalaric set up a surgical table for them alone to show his appreciation for their courage or foolishness. Soldiers strolled through the chamber as if they were on patrol. They made work harder. Aram heard later that they were regular army, not arena guards. Mikram had sent them to ensure that no injured captive escaped a future in the arena by capturing a healer and threatening his way to freedom. It was plain to all that the heir did not understand how the gladiators were kept. A soldier got in Aram's way for the third time. His concentration on his gladiator shattered. Aram turned on the intruder, his raised hand filled with sparkling black fire.
"Trip me up once more and they'll send a rock for your family to bury," he shouted. "Or I'll trade your spirit for his and let you die."
The soldier put his hand on the hilt of his sword, but did not draw it. He could see the other helpers around the table were stepping back.
"Soldier, this man is going nowhere."
Ramasu stepped between Aram and the veteran.
"Aram has him under control." "He's half mad is what he is," the soldier snapped.
Ramasu drew himself up to his full height.
"My word as a master of the school for mages. Your captive will not escape Aram. You are better employed elsewhere."
Ramasu wore dignity and power like a cloak, despite the blood on his robe and face. Magic billowed away from him. It was the touch of something that made the soldier feel unwanted.
"Take it on yourself, then," the soldier snapped, as Aram turned back to his patient. "If that rat on the table escapes and kills decent people, it'll be on you to blame. If Aram turns you to ash, it will be yourself to blame. Did no one teach you the folly of impeding a working mage?"
Ramasu's voice was ice.
"Go, before I place a complaint before your captain."
The man moved off, though he kept his hand on his sword's hilt.
"Thank you," Aram murmured.
Despite the noise, Ramasu heard.
"You're lucky I was within earshot. Mikram's men have been in combat for a very long time. It's not wise to tug their tails."
The man leaned closer.
"And you might find you don't have as much gift for combat as you thought. It doesn't stretch like healing does, so watch yourself."
Aram nodded and continued to do his best, praying softly to Hikaja to save the man before him. At last the moment came when he had done all he could do without draining himself completely.
"Graveyard hag, roll the dice in his favor," he prayed softly. "Black god of death, please turn him from your door."
Gingerly, he touched his fingers to the man's throat. There was the tiniest trace of a pulse.
"He's alive. Leave him here for a while,"
See how he does, he told one of the helpers. I'll move elsewhere.
He bent to gather his bag of medical supplies. It was then his body decided that he should keep on bending until his forehead struck the stone tiles. After that, things went dark for a while. He roused briefly while someone carried him on a stretcher. More than one someone, he corrected himself. It would take at least two people to carry him on a stretcher. Then he got the horrible idea that they thought he was dead.
No! No!
He shouted, though the noise that came from his throat was more like a croak.
I'm alive! I'm fine!
He tried to wave, but his arm proved too hard to lift.
Is he trying to talk? Asked a voice down by his feet. Don't matter, a hoarse voice near his head replied. The master gave us our orders.
A face, female, upside down, appeared in Aram's vision.
Just you be quiet. Your master says you're done for now. You go back to sleep.
But I'm needed.
Boy, I've been arguing with gladiators and mages all day, the woman told him. Hush! Sleep.
He slept. For the next 2 days, he and Ramasu, together with Dalaric and his group of healers, rose at dawn to see to their wounded. For the most part, they handled those whose hurts had not been deadly serious on the first day, and those who had been healed enough to keep them alive overnight. Preet sang to entertain the sick. Aram juggled after supper, when everyone was too weary to work magic or to endure having it worked upon them. Dalaric produced a set of pipes, one of his friends a drum, and another a round form of harp. On the third day, most gladiators and captive soldiers were healed and had been sent to the gladiators' housing. Those who were still abed could be handled by Dalaric. It was time to go home. While the senior healers attended the captain's luncheon thanks for their work, Aram remained in the small cell he and Ramasu had shared under the arena, packing up the last of the medicines for Dalaric's patients. He'd finished and was looking for Preet. She had flown off somewhere, when he thought he'd heard something.
Psst!
He had heard something.
Who's there?
He raised his lamp and looked around the corridor. Something tapped his shoulder. He whirled and saw nothing. He was struggling to remember a spell of detection when he looked down. On the packed floor, clear in the lamplight and the torchlight from above, was someone's shadow. His tormentor began to laugh.
I forgot about the shadow. Master Chioke would mark me down for that.
The air in front of Aram rippled, and Ozorn appeared. Aram gaped, then cried.
What? Ozorn, how did you get here? Where are your guards? Where's Okot?
Preet dropped from the shadows, trilling happily, and lit on Ozorn's shoulder. Ozorn smoothed her back.
I love you too, sweetheart.
Then he scowled at Aram.
And there's a friendly greeting from you.
Aram smiled and hugged his friend with a care for Preet. Ozorn hugged him fiercely in return.
No, no, Ozorn. I missed you, of course I did. It's been miserable, but you shouldn't be here. It's too dangerous. Dangerous, monkey wash, his friend replied scornfully. Even you didn't know I was here until you saw my shadow. I'll fix that next time, believe me. Okot doesn't know because my mother summoned him to report on my status in person. I think she wants to find out if Faris and I have gone to bed yet.
Ozorn!
Aram snapped as heat rushed into his cheeks. Preet gave a chuckling sound. Ozorn clapped him on the shoulder.
Oh, she isn't interested in me, nor I in her. Not like that. Anyway, I gave the guards the slip, sneaked a horse, and came to see if I could find you. I didn't see you at the games.
I was back here, Aram replied.
Working.
Ozorn studied him with sharp eyes.
that bad, was it?
Aram looked down the corridor toward the big room where so many had died. Ozorn hugged him around the shoulders.
All right, friend.
His voice was gentler than before.
You're going home. I'll make sure you don't get this kind of duty again.
For a moment, the thought of never hearing those screams, smelling those stinks, feeling blood and organs spill through his hands made Aram dizzy. Not to be afraid when a thick, muscled brute caught him alone in the infirmary. He shook it off and smiled at his friend.
Don't do that. I'm needed here and places like it. Not enough of us can do healing spells. I have a knack for it. And some of these people are all right. Sarge, Lucinda, for one. And there's this woman, Gueda.
Oh ho, Ozorn said, laughing. A woman!
He can always make me turn red, Aram thought unhappily as he protested.
It's not like that. She's a gladiator, and a good one. Wait, the one with the big cat that was killed?
Aram nodded.
She was magnificent,
Ozorn said with awe as Preet toyed with his braids. He wore no beads that would give him away with their noise.
They killed her cat, and we thought she was done. Instead, it was like she turned into a tiger herself, outnumbered 5-1, and she killed them all. Varys made a fortune betting on her. Did she live?
Aram smiled.
Yes.
He didn't say he was the healer who treated her. Ozorn looked at their gloomy surroundings.
Would you show me around? I may never get back here. You know they'll make me pay for this little excursion. I'll be lucky if Okut doesn't chain me to my seat whenever I attend games again.
As little as he wanted to return to those blood-stinking rooms, Aram heard the touch of sadness in his friend's voice. It was true. The list of things that Ozorn was not allowed to do grew longer each year. He nodded and led his friend up through the underside of the arena. Without emphasizing it, he was careful to ensure that Ozorn saw the dark, stinking cells where the unhurt gladiators and animals were kept before and after combats, cramped lockups without fresh air, water, or privies.
They deserve better,
Ozorn said grimly as they returned for Aram's bundles.
They give their lives for us. They should have better places to wait.
They deserve to live, Aram murmured.
You cannot take the games from the people,
his friend said gently, helping him to collect the various packages of medicines.
There would be rioting. There has been rioting and murder when past emperors have tried it. I have a book on the history of the games. You should read it.
When Aram had everything he needed, Ozorn stood in the corridor and reworked his invisibility spell.
I'll follow you,
Ozorn said, when only his shadow remained.
Where do you go when you've dropped these off?
Aram had meant to attend the lunch, but he couldn't with his friend there.
Back to my quarters to get my things, and then to the wagon to wait for Master Ramasu,
he said. We leave once he comes.
I'll ride on your wagon, then,
Ozorn said, as they walked down the corridor. Preet flew ahead.
I left my horse tied up outside camp. The trickiest part of this whole adventure has been waiting for someone to pass through a gate so I can go too.
He fell silent as Aram let them out into the open. The guards waiting there nodded to him.
I'm the last mage, Aram told them. No one else is inside.
He walked on toward the temporary tent where the remaining injured gladiators were housed. He hoped that the sight of these fighters, battling the worst of wounds, their lives still in question, might convince Ozorn that changes should be made to the games. He knew the likelihood of Ozorn's becoming emperor was small, but as Masaraz's heir, he would have influence. The yard was quiet. The wounded were resting.
Two guards were dicing quietly in front of the tent. They nodded to Aram and returned to the game. They didn't notice that Aram held the flap open for a moment before he walked inside, making certain that Ozorn could walk in.
"Make the bird be quiet," one of the gamblers said. "She'll wake the lads."
Preet was screeching from inside the tent. Aram stepped in and pointed at the flap he still held open.
"Preet! Bad girl!" he scolded. "Out!"
A pair of hands seized him and yanked him aside. A rough, calloused hand clapped over his mouth. A muscled arm gripped him by the throat. Preet fled through the smoke hole in the canvas roof. Ozorn, shocked out of his grip on his spell, flickered into view. He was grabbed by a man who had been positioned behind the tent flap. Aram clawed at the hand that blocked his mouth and nostrils. Suddenly remembering something Varys had told him, he stamped down hard on his captor's foot. The man behind him grunted, the hand over his mouth loosened. Aram grabbed the arm around his throat and pulled it back enough that he could catch his breath. Without air, he couldn't remember any spells. He shifted his hand and drove his thumbnail as deeply into the tender flesh next to the big wrist tendon as he could. A dart of pain shot through his temple. A trickle of warmth rolled down his neck. He knew it was blood.
"Next time I'll use more of my blade," his captor said. "And I recognize your friend. I can hurt him awful bad without killing him. You ease off or I'll tell my friend where to start."
Aram looked at Ozorn. His captor had gotten him by the hair and yanked his head back. With his free hand, he had a dagger point at Ozorn's ear. One movement and Ozorn would lose his hearing on that side, if he was lucky. Ozorn's eyes were wild with rage, but he dared not move. Aram's captor said to Ozorn,
"I've no such qualms about this piece of dog mutton. I'll start with one of his eyes if you so much as say ouch."
Aram knew that voice. He'd heard it before the games, talking with Chioke. Aram glanced to his side. Katrin, that was his name, held a short sword to his temple.
"Unless you want your face sliced away a bit at a time, put your hands behind your back," Katrin ordered. "The slightest wrong move from either of you, and my friends will start killing the sick."
Aram looked around. Three more gladiators stood inside the tent, the forbidden short swords in their hands. Each was within striking distance of one of the recovering gladiators on the cots, all five of whom had been gagged, then bound hand and foot with rope. Someone had put a sleep spell on them. They were taking no chances. Was it Dalaric's attendant? There was no sign of him. Katrin swiftly bound Aram's hands behind him.
"Turn around, boy,"
he ordered, slapping the back of Aram's head. Aram did as he was told, eyeing the patients.
"I don't know what you're doing,"
he said mildly, still trying to think of a spell that might work. "We don't keep medicines here." It was a lie, and a weak one. If his man had been after drugs before, he'd search for them now. And he could always use Ozorn to get some brought to him, though he'd never escape afterward.
"Dolt, I was never after medicines,"
Katrin said, to Aram's disappointment.
"And now I can get anything I want. I don't even need you. Not with the princess's only boy in my fist."
He pointed to the man who had finished binding and gagging Ozorn.
"Yemro, fetch the university mage. Tell him his student had an accident. Leave your sword."
The man ran to do as he was bidden.
"And as for you,"
Katrin told Aram, jabbing him in the chest with his sword.
"One word, one bit of pretty light, and I start trimming bits off each of you. Understand?" "You won't get Ramasu's cooperation if I'm dead," Aram said.
Aram didn't see Katrin strike. He only felt the blow against the side of his head that knocked him down. His ears rang. He lay still for a moment, battling a rush of fury as well as pain. Ozorn was bellowing behind his cloth gag.
"Quiet, Prince," Katrin told Ozorn, "or I'll give him something like this."
Katrin kicked Aram in the belly.
"I don't need him now."
He pointed his weapon at Ozorn.
"Keep trying my patience, and he'll get everything I've taken in the arena."
Aram tried to curl up, yanking the ropes around his wrists. The pain in his stomach overshadowed the raw fiber digging into his skin. His gift surged like wildfire, fighting the control he kept on it, threatening to flare and incinerate Katrin. If he'd believed the gladiator would be the only victim, Aram wouldn't have struggled. He just couldn't be sure he wouldn't burn the entire tent and everyone in it. Slowly, he breathed in through his nose and released the breath, fighting tears of pain and rage. Could he deal with this brute without speaking? Without allowing his gift to show to non-mage eyes? Katrin walked over to Ozorn. The prince was trembling with fury, though no sounds came from behind the gag on his mouth.
"You'd be a splendid shield, but no,"
Katrin murmured.
"Too gaudy. Too visible. They'd never stop hunting if I took you. But Ramasu will move the gods and the dead to save you. Oh, yes."
He nodded and grinned. He beckoned to one of the others. The man came over and helped Katrin to haul Aram to his feet. He returned to his hostage when he was certain Aram would stay upright.
"Now we understand one another,"
Katrin said. The smile he gave Aram was tight and mean.
"Your master will get us a ship out of Karthak."
Aram had stopped listening. There was a time when he worked magic without words but with gestures, standing in front of a class and a bowl of water. But he had thought about it, pulled on it, and had his concentration broken to flood his classroom. He was older and stronger now. If he tried to work the spells he could do silently and lost concentration, his classroom flood would be nothing in comparison.
"You are mistaken."
Ramasu walked into the tent with Preet on his shoulder and Dalaric's assistant at his side. Apparently they had fetched the mage before Katrin's messenger could reach him.
"I would never do something so criminal. The university forbids us from helping slaves in any fashion."
"Cat turds,"
snapped Katrin.
"We have his splendidness Prince Ozorn right here. You'll help us."
Aram felt his ears tingling. He felt magic seep into the room, magic other than the stuff he was drawing on. He glanced at Ozorn, who nodded. He felt it too. Mages outside were working sleep spells. He began to tremble. If Katrin suspected, he would give the order to start killing the patients. In fact, Katrin was telling Ramasu his plans.
"The slightest itch of magic, and I will start cutting."
To Aram's horror, he pointed to Ozorn.
"I can do plenty of damage and still leave enough to be air. I learned from experts."
Ramasu shook his head.
"It will be as much as your lives are worth."
"And the lives of you, and your precious assistant, and everyone here. I'll see to that, Master Mage. You don't come from here. The Emperor sweeps wide when he thinks folks should have saved one of his darlings and didn't."
He looked at one of his yawning men.
"What's the matter with—"
he demanded, and yawned. His eyes went wide with fury. He whirled and ran at Ozorn, his sword aimed at the prince's belly. Aram could only see the blade aimed at his best friend. He opened his entire mind to the water summons that had changed his life. His gift plummeted, far stronger than it had been in the lower academy, to plunge into the water table that lay for miles under and around university and arena. It rose, thundering up in the wake of his power, letting him guide it straight to Katrin. The hard ground quivered. The gladiator lurched. The cold fountain smashed through the earth, knocking Aram, Ozorn, Ramasu, and the standing gladiators down. It drove Katrin into the air until he struck the tent ceiling. His sword dropped from his grip. He hit the ground with a thud. Preet immediately attacked his face with her claws, screeching. He lay there, unresisting. Ramasu made a sign of undoing. Aram's and Ozorn's bonds fell away from their hands and mouths. Struggling to his feet, Aram dashed the water from his eyes and drew three fiery signs in the air with his gift. The column of water halted as abruptly as it had risen and returned to the ground. Dizzy and trembling, Aram drew two more signs to knit the earth back together as Ozorn scrambled for Katrin's sword. Rising to his knees, the prince leveled the blade at Katrin's throat. As the man's followers, glassy-eyed with sleep, blinked at their leader, Ramasu called out the most powerful sleep spell Aram had ever heard him use. The slowly rising spell cast by the mages outside leaped higher as Aram wrote the sigil on his palm that would keep him from falling victim to it. The attackers' eyes rolled up in their heads, and the swords fell from their hands. Their bodies followed. Ozorn, too, was caught by the spell. He collapsed onto the ground. Soldiers rushed in and began to put manacles on the rebels. Ramasu glanced at the prince, then sighed. Reaching out, he sketched a sign of invisibility over Aram's friend.
"Make sure he doesn't get stepped on," he told Aram quietly. "It's better if we limit those who know he's here."
Aram nodded and shifted position to sit directly in front of his invisible friend. Ramasu and Dalaric's assistant checked the healing gladiators. The danger of the spell that had dropped their captors was that it was risky for men already in a healing sleep. When they were certain that all of their patients were unharmed, Ramasu turned to Aram to heal his still bleeding cuts. The captain of the camp's guard arrived as two of his men dragged the manacled Katrin to his feet.
"Hag's dice! What happened here?"
he demanded.
"Master Ramasu, Aram, are you hurt?"
"We are fine,"
Ramasu said, helping Aram to stand. Aram swayed. Ramasu propped him up and told the captain,
"More important, our patients are fine."
"But what happened?" the captain demanded.
"Aram thought the sleep was happening too slowly to put the rebels down," Ramasu explained. "So he opened a fountain in the ground and knocked the leader against the top of the tent."
He touched the ground with his foot.
"It's still a bit damp. We might want to put rugs down to keep the sick from getting chilled, and ask Dalaric to put them in dry gowns."
"Sorry, master," Aram mumbled.
"You were rushed," Ramasu said kindly. "Though you might trust the arts of your elders more next time."
He flicked his fingers at Katrin, who woke. A guard dragged him to his feet.
"The captain and I would like to know what you were thinking," Ramasu said mildly.
Katrin replied with obscenities.
"They were going to force you to help them to escape, master," Aram said. "Cackleheads," the captain said with contempt. "Everyone knows we search the healers' wagons when they go in case someone tries to sneak out. A week of bread and water for this lot, and they get to play the Sirajit army in the next games."
"Wait," Katrin yelled.
"I..."
The guard who had seized him cuffed him into silence. Aram glanced at Ramasu. For a moment, he thought he'd felt a spell leave the master and attach itself to Katrin and his men, but he hadn't seen it. He staggered in Ramasu's hold, dizzy again and barely able to stand. Dalaric rushed in and braced Aram's free side.
"Aram, what's this?"
he asked with concern.
"You were fine when we left." "Apparently Katrin and his pack took Aram and the wounded as hostages," the captain explained. They must have run mad to think Master Ramasu could walk them out of here. Our mages put sleep on them, but before it took, the boy made a fountain that smacked Katrin silly and then dropped him.
Katrin hit me in the head, too, Aram said cheerfully. His knees turned to water, and he sagged in the mage's grips. But I'm fine.
Dalaric raised his eyebrows.
No wonder you're wrung out, then, he told Aram. 3 days of serious healing, a clout on the head, and whatever you just did on top of it. Don't tell me you're fine.
I am, Aram protested.
Mm-hmm,
Dalaric said dubiously. He motioned for a soldier to take charge of Aram.
Take him to the healer's quarters, and let him lie down for a bit, will you?
When Aram woke, it was full dark outside the window. He was on his cot, tucked snugly under a light blanket. The touch of soft feathers against his ear told him that Preet was sleeping there. Movement in the room made him flinch. Preet grumbled and went back to sleep as Ramasu pushed a folding shade aside. He had been reading behind it, using a globe of magic for light. He set his book down and produced a bowl and spoon from a small table.
Ozorn? Aram asked, worried. Smuggled out while he was still unconscious,
Ramasu told him.
You will have to convince him that he missed nothing spectacular.
Aram sighed in relief.
Good. Now, I must ask. Did you have any part in his surprise visit to this camp?
Aram sat bolt upright.
No, master. I didn't know anything until he crept up on me in the Colosseum.
Ramasu smiled.
Do you know? I believe you. It's that startled fawn aspect you wear when you have been taken by surprise. I think I shall have to speak to Chioke about giving Ozorn more challenging work to keep him out of trouble in the future.
He didn't mean to get in trouble, Aram protested.
No, and it is the fault of his family for trying to restrict so high-spirited and clever a youth. It will be well, Aram. He is very lucky to have a friend like you.
Ramasu picked up a napkin and unfurled it.
Are you hungry?
Aram's stomach lurched, 3 quarters with excitement and 1 quarter with nausea.
A little, he admitted.
Ramasu passed the bowl and spoon to him, saying,
Before you try that.
He shaped a glowing sign in the air. Aram's stomach settled immediately.
Better?
Aram nodded.
Eat before it gets any colder.
He said nothing as Aram wolfed the mild soup, but continued to read from his book. When Aram put the bowl aside, Ramasu asked,
Have you any questions about this afternoon?
Aram scratched his head.
How did they get the weapons? I thought they were counted and locked up after the games.
Apparently, they bribed an animal seller to bring them in last year. They buried them under their barracks until yesterday,
the master replied.
And they arranged for an accident to happen to the seller the next time he came, with no one the wiser for why it happened.
Aram yawned.
I'll be glad to be home,
he admitted. Ramasu gathered his bowl and spoon.
As will I. It is useful work here, but it is hard on the body and the spirit. You have done very well. I am proud of you.
Aram smiled. He was asleep as soon as he put his head down. They loaded their things into the wagon first thing the next morning. Only Musenda and Gueda came to see them off. Aram's heart broke at the dark circles that surrounded Gueda's eyes and the slump to her shoulders. He reached out a hand to touch her, then stopped. She might not care for that.
How are you?
He asked instead, walking a little way aside with her. She shrugged.
They want to give me another cat. But I won't do it. I almost punched the captain of the arena when he asked me.
Aram nodded. He'd feel the same if something happened to Preet and anyone offered him another bird the next day.
But I mean to live, Gaweta said.
Her eyes sparkled dangerously.
You'll see. I'll have vengeance for Takuma.
But you killed the gladiators who killed him, Aram said faintly. She looked deadly.
Oh, aye, that. But there's those that scheduled us against them. And I mean to see if his feed was drugged. It's been done before,
she said in response to Aram's look of shock.
When an animal so good no one can beat him, no one bets against him. Gamblers don't like to lose money at the games, so they make their arrangements. If that's what happened, I'll sniff it out, you'll see. In the meantime,
she bumped her fist gently against Aram's cheekbone.
Hekaja bless you for putting me back together. Twice! I wish I could do better than thank you.
Your thanks is more than enough for me, Aram said. He smiled at her.
Gods go with you, Gaweta.
He watched her as she trudged off. Musenda turned away from Ramasu, who was already on the wagon seat. They'd been talking quietly. Now the gladiator took Aram's hand.
I told Master Ramasu, it's fine with us if you return. Not once did you treat us like animals. That's rare. Take care of yourself, Aram.
If you will do the same, Sarge, Aram replied. The gladiator grinned.
That's what I'm best at.
He followed Gaweta back into the heart of the gladiator's compound.
Aram,
Ramasu called. Aram mounted the seat beside the master and nodded to the gate guards as they drove through. He turned to look back at the camp as the iron gates clanged shut. He shuddered. He had learned a great deal while he was there. It was true. In particular, he had found that he wasn't certain he could stay in a country where slavery was practiced. He had always thought he would manage to avoid it somehow when he left the university, or that he would become used to it. Now he understood he could not avoid it. The university managed to live slave-free, but it was a lie. The shadow of slavery lay over it. The arena was only the very worst of this way of life. Lesser forms of brutality to men and women were everywhere. When people were bought and sold, it was just too easy for free people to treat them as things. He couldn't face that. Sooner or later, he would have to leave his friends and his teachers. He could not stay here. Lintal greeted him with a warm hug. Preet announced her happiness over their return with a cheerful set of whistles as she fluttered all over Aram's stale room. The master opened the shutters to air the place out and went into the sitting room next door. He returned with wonderfully cold tea. Aram had struggled to learn the spell for a year without success, and a small bowl of cherries.
With Hulak's compliments,
he said, placing the bowl on Aram's table. As if by magic, the tortoise sunstone appeared at Lindhall's side, making his begging groan.
No, sunstone, you know very well they aren't good for you,
Aram said with a smile. Little muscles all over his body were starting to relax. He hadn't even known how tense he had been until this moment. He glanced at Lindhall.
How did Master Hulak know I was coming home? Come,
you know we masters talk all the time?
Lindahl replied, dusting Aram's table with his handkerchief.
Ramasu kept us apprised on how you fared. We were concerned,
he said in answer to Aram's questioning look.
We weren't certain that the camp was the proper place for you.
Thinking of Katrin's attack, Aram grimaced.
It was educational, he replied.
So we feared. Will you go again?
Lindahl asked. He sipped his tea.
I learned a great deal of surgery quickly,
Aram told him slowly.
I'd like to learn more and make sure of what I've learned already, but perhaps I could do that in a city infirmary and do the rest of my healing studies during plague seasons.
He looked away from Lindahl as his chin began to tremble.
It's a horrible place.
For a long moment, the older man said nothing. Then he remarked,
Certainly, I will benefit from your knowledge, however acquired. The patients are smaller here, but perhaps their reason for coming to us is more bearable. Speaking of patients, I have 3 meerkat pups left with me by a traveling show. The adults were stolen, but...
Aram grinned.
Meerkat pups?
He'd seen pictures and heard descriptions, but he'd never seen one in person.
Where? The menagerie?
Lindahl chuckled.
No, these are pups. We've been fighting to keep them alive for 3 days. Are you sure you wouldn't rather rest?
But Aram was already on his way through the sitting room to Lindahl's private nursery, stepping nimbly around Sunstone. Preet cheeped at Lindahl as if to say, What can you do? And perched on the older man's shoulder, ready to see these marvels for herself. Aram went back to his room near supper time with a small meerkat nestled in his shirt front. He was trying to decide if it was worth the trouble of returning the youngster to the heated nursery before he went to the noisy dining hall, or simply looking for whatever Lindahl and the students had tucked away for snacks, when someone rapped on his door. He opened it, expecting to find a mastery student with Preet, who had gone wandering when the nursery proved too warm for her. Instead, he saw Varys, pretty in a pale blue cotton dress under her white robe. Her golden curls were pinned up, but some had tumbled forward over her shoulders. He wanted to touch them more than he'd wanted anything in his life. He moved forward to hug her, surely in a brotherly way, and remembered the meerkat in his shirt just in time. She was also holding a large basket with both hands. She smiled at him.
I asked Master Ramasu how you were, and he said flat with exhaustion. When I didn't see you at any other meal, I thought I'd bring you supper. There's plenty if Master Lindahl wants some.
He took the basket.
Oh, he's at some meeting at the master's dining hall. Will you join me? We can eat in the study.
He led the way there, keeping his arms and the basket well away from his small charge. Once inside the study, he put the basket down with relief. It was heavy.
Why are you walking so strangely? She asked. Did someone hit you?
Aram grinned at her.
No, I'm being careful of my friend.
Unbuttoning his shirt, he showed her the meerkat pup.
Master Lindahl has the other two, he explained.
He said he hopes they don't get lively during the meeting.
I've seen the adult ones in the menagerie, she said, gently lifting the pup out.
These were abandoned. Lindahl hopes the adults will accept them once we're certain they don't have any illnesses.
He watched her a little nervously as she set the pup on one of Lindahl's many cushions. She stepped closer to him and said,
I missed you so much. I can't believe how much. Smiling, she stood on her tiptoes, twined her arms around his neck, pulled his head down, and planted her lips on his in a very no-nonsense way. She had kissed him on the mouth a few times before, just as a friendly salute. This was far more than friendly. Aram closed his eyes and sank into the kiss. Her lips were very soft. He held her comfortable body tightly, lifting her clean off the floor so their mouths were on the same level. She was running her hands over his shoulders and the side of his face. For once in his life, he could barely think. He was also barely breathing. Gently, regretfully, he drew back, setting her on the ground. "Well," she said, brushing her gown into order. There was a very pleased smile on her face. "Finally! I waited and waited for you to make the first move, like the gentleman is supposed to. If I'd realized you only needed me to do it, I would have proceeded ages ago." He smoothed her tumbled golden hair with trembling hands.
"Those were hints?"
he asked plaintively.
"I thought those were kisses like you'd give a brother."
Varys laughed. "You have very odd ideas about how I kiss my brothers, then." He wobbled.
"I'm sorry," he said apologetically as they nearly tripped. "I haven't eaten since, I think, this morning, but it wasn't much."
"That won't do. We'll get you fed, and then," she bumped him with her knee, "we can discuss other things." Aram beamed down at her.
"I hope so."
"I know so. I am tired of waiting for you to do something, Aram Draper," Varys said as they turned toward the food. He stopped.
"You remind me. I brought you something."
He hurried to his room for the favor he'd requested of Sarge. Ramasu had explained that the gladiators commonly burned their used-up gear so foes in the arena, or among the betters, could not steal it to use for spells to bring them down. Aram had persuaded Sarge and Ramasu to let him have a token, properly spelled to remove Sarge's essence, for Varys. He gave the silk-wrapped bundle to her. She gasped when she opened it. The glove was a nasty, dirty thing, worn out at the fingertips and the seams, but Sarge's name was inked on the back, and it had clearly been hard used. Varys crumpled it in her hands. "Is this?"
"One of his training gloves," Aram told her.
She yelped and flung her arms around his neck for another kiss. Aram could have continued all night if someone had not rapped on his door. Quickly they released each other and straightened their clothes before Aram gathered up the meerkat and went to see who had come to call. It was Ozorn. Immediately he tried to embrace Aram, only to stop when he saw the meerkat pup. His face, already alight when he saw Aram, brightened even more. He reached a finger to the small creature.
"I heard Lintal had pups," he said softly. "There are two more?"
"With Lintal," Aram said.
"This one was asleep until a moment ago." "Did Varys wake him? She wasn't at the dining hall."
"I'm here," Varys called from the study. "I brought Aram supper." There was nothing else to do, and truly, Aram didn't begrudge his best friend for interrupting his time with Varys.
"Will you join us? Varys is staying. You know she brought enough for 12.
He passed the meerkat into Ozorn's hands.
Oh, yes, of course,"
Ozorn said absently, stroking the pup's head. He looked at the two guards behind him.
"I'll be dining here. You can wait."
He slid into Aram's room and closed the door. He lowered his voice.
"Listen, I wanted to say about what happened." "There's nothing to say," Aram said. "We came out of it alive. That's the important thing."
"Sergeant Okot?" he thought to ask. He was surprised Ozorn's chief guard was letting him wander.
Not back from Mother's yet,
Ozorn replied.
I've been informed I'm in for it when he is, and I'm not to leave this building except for lessons.
He gripped Aram's arm with a many-ringed hand. He cradled the pup against his chest with the other.
And there's plenty to say,
he said firmly, looking into Aram's eyes.
We've been friends for a long time. I've always been glad of it, but you saved my life in that tent.
I panicked, Aram. I couldn't think of a single working.
You would have,
Aram assured his friend,
when you'd caught your breath. But I didn't,
Ozorn protested.
You saw how the wind blew, and you did what had to be done before that madman gouged our eyes out. I will never forget that. I can't think of anyone who would do so much for me without wanting something, except you.
He frowned.
Do you want something?
Supper, Aram replied. Ozorn laughed.
I have never had friends like you and Varice. I don't know anyone who's ever had friends like you two.
And if you're lucky, you never will, Varice called. Will you let him collapse of starvation, or will you come to the table? Aram had just settled the pup in a basket nest by his place when Varice asked, Why are you back so soon? You said your mother meant to keep you until late Saturday.
She did,
Ozorn replied, then grinned as they took their seats.
But I'd had about enough of her chatter regarding the eligible girls I must try to meet this week when she started over lunch. Lucky for her and me, she'd invited Chioke to share the meal. Right away he started telling her how much trouble I was having in my classes with Cosmas and Dagani, how I was going to miss Cosmas's next examination and it will hurt my marks. Well, no Tasike will score badly in an examination. I tell you, my mother practically shoved me out the door.
Ozorn chuckled as he shook out his napkin.
I wish I had Chioke's way with her.
You could try his technique, Varice suggested, filling his cup with pomegranate juice. Aram frowned. Gently not wanting to upset his friends, he asked, Ozorn, you trust Chioke? Truly trust him? He explained about the conversation between the mage and Katrin. Ozorn was silent for a moment before he said,
It could have been that he was trying to rig fights. I know he does that.
Aram was shocked. And you condone it? Ozorn chuckled.
Aram, don't you know? It's good to have something on those who might try to gain power over you. Just in case. You gave me something to hold over Chioke, should he get artful with me.
He patted Aram on the cheek.
I even have something on Mother.
And me? Aram asked, trying to hide his outrage. Varice? Ozorn kissed his cheek.
No, I believe in the two of you without reservation. A fellow never had better friends, Aram.
Ozorn, Varice announced patiently. Aram, the food grows cold.
Your hearts are as true as gold,
Ozorn said, grinning as he slung an arm around Aram's shoulder.
Let's eat.
Aram sat cross-legged at the low table between his two best friends. Preet landed on his shoulder and squawked in his ear. Unseen, Varice rubbed one of her knees against his as she passed a dish of couscous. Ozorn was laughing as the meerkat tried to work free of his basket. He listens to Varice and me, Aram told himself, offering Preet a piece of flatbread. I have years and years of studies before I'm a master. Something will work out so we can leave Karthak. Or perhaps Ozorn will convince the new emperor to put an end to slavery. Then I can stay. In the distance, he thought he could hear an old woman's cackling laughter. A hag's laughter. This is Ari Myers. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Tempests and Slaughter, The Numenera Chronicles, Book 1, by Tamora Pierce. This program was directed by Richard Brewer, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright, 2018 by Tamora Pierce. Production copyright, 2018 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.